a passing of an era, as Margaret Thatcher is laid to rest today in a funeral in London with full military honors. Some of the sounds from the somber ceremony today. This is a moment for veteran BBC correspondent Stephen Sacker to reflect on what Thatcher has left behind and what of the Thatcher vision has been swept away by world events. Sacker was in New York yesterday trying to reconcile the latest terrorism headlines with the historic legacy of Margaret Thatcher. He even believes that the constitutional questions about terrorism and freedom raised at Guantanamo Bay are part of this broader conversation. Sacker is the host of the BBC program Hard Talk. In the UK, he's kind of a Charlie Rose figure, larger than life and with a fly-on-the-wall view of history at the same time. He says the events this week in Boston and Washington are a compelling backdrop for the Thatcher funeral.
It was amazing to me, just as I arrived in the United States for this trip, to see the terrible events unfold in Boston and to realize that this week, you know, with Margaret Thatcher's funeral in London, it was hard for me to imagine that any news item was going to knock that off the front pages in the United Kingdom. But of course, the events in Boston have well and truly done that. And it's been a strange time in the United Kingdom the last few days because there's been so much soul-searching and navel-gazing as a result of the death of Thatcher. But as you say, you know, life goes on. Some of the huge structural challenges facing our society and yours, they're still out there. And I guess Boston has given us a very brutal reminder of that.
You know, we're used to being very cynical in the United States. I suspect there's a bit of a cynicism strain in the UK. But from our point of view, a lot of presidents seem to be in a bubble. When you talk to them, when you hear their public statements, they're either cautious to a fault or, in a sense, only seeing part of the story. In your experience on this Project Hard Talk, do you find that the leaders that you encounter are of a type, or is every single one one of a kind in some way?
I think they are ones of a kind. You know, it's very hard to generalize about leaders, and goodness knows on my show I get the privilege of talking to all sorts of different leaders, some Democrats, some authoritarians, some out-and-out dictators. I mean, just to give you an idea of the range, in the last year or two, I've interviewed Hugo Chavez, the late Hugo Chavez. I've interviewed one of Africa's last remaining dictators, a guy called Teodoro Obiang in the tiny oil state of Equatorial Guinea. I've interviewed the reformist former military leader who's the president of Burma, Thein Sein. You know, these are all fascinating individuals at the top of very complex, often hugely problematic governments. Do they have anything in common? Probably all of them have ego. They all have, I suppose, a sort of ability to impose themselves upon a system, including a military. Some have great charisma, some don't. You know, all leaders exist in systems which are complex. There's no such thing as a very simple political system. And my job, partly as an interviewer, is to tease out where the tensions and the difficulties lie for any particular leader in their own context.
Did you get the impression that George W. Bush had fun in the White House, enjoyed what he was doing? He was a fun-loving guy, but I don't know if his job was terribly much fun.
Yeah, I don't think, who am I to really say, but I don't, my impression, I only interviewed him once early on in his administration, should be said before 9/11, and you can argue that the Bush administration's history changed entirely on 9/11.
Totally.
But he didn't strike me as a guy who naturally felt comfortable with all the machinery that there is in the presidency and inside the White House. And I think if we look back on the Bush presidency, we will think of a guy who never looked entirely comfortable in the office.
Speaking of feeling uncomfortable and thinking about the events in Boston, you know, the UK has this experience for much of its history over the last 200 years, running this empire. This event happens in Boston, and the entire world is focused on Boston. I'm just wondering, because of the profile of the United States, if you're a terrorist, the place to attack is the U.S. We have a bullseye on us, partly for policy reasons, but also partly because everyone is focused on the United States.
I think that's a very, very good point. And, you know, you, as an international journalist like you, John, with long experience of covering conflicts and wars all over the world, it is so striking how the sort of scenes we saw in Boston have an impact which far outweighs terrible violence that we see reported on the news wires every single day from so many different parts of the world. I mean, think about what has probably happened. We don't even necessarily follow it so closely anymore, but what has probably happened in the last 24 hours in Afghanistan or Syria or Iraq or, frankly, a host of other countries too. Terrible violence, which doesn't have that immense impact that we've seen from Boston. And, of course, everybody in the United States is thinking about Boston today, but it may be salutary sometimes to think about the sorts of violence that happened every single day in so many other parts of the world.
Well, if it wasn't such a focus and if the reaction wasn't so extraordinary, not to say that we would want to get to a point where we're accustomed to terrorism, but it would be reassuring to think that we're not the focus of the world's attention in terms of thinking about other incidents like this.
I think what is worth saying is that given the very sort of powerful metaphor of the bullseye on America's back for terror groups who would like to cause a massive stir up of international attention, it is all the more impressive the degree to which, you know, post 9/11 the United States has delivered security for its own citizens on its own soil. I mean, it has, by and large. There have been attempts, Times Square and others. But, you know, Americans, I think, should appreciate the degree to which their security services have delivered protection for the last decade.
Even within a robust debate about whether the Constitution has been stretched a bit, that's for sure something we're struggling with here, but you're absolutely right.
Well, that's right, and I tell you, I don't know if you read it, John, but there was an extraordinarily powerful personal letter in the New York Times just a couple of days ago from a prisoner in Guantanamo Bay who is currently on hunger strike, saying that he can no longer tolerate the situation in which he is currently being held. I tweeted about that and just said I thought it would be important for every American to read that, reflect on it, form their own judgment on what he said, including President Obama himself. You know, I think that constant debate in this country about security, about individual rights, about the justice system, it needs to be reviewed and renewed every single day because it is fundamentally important for the future of this country.
Themes woven throughout this hour, that's for sure. Stephen Sacker, host of the BBC's Hard Talk program, thanks so much.
John, it's a pleasure being here.
Let's end on a conversation you're having. You may have heard the program yesterday and heard that conversation with the doctor in the Boston Marathon who ran back to the scene to help victims. That encouraged one of our listeners, Dan in New Jersey, who was in the first World Trade Center attack in 1993, to call.
I heard the surgeon who spoke of how he ran and then went back, and I really wondered if he had that same feeling, which to this day is haunting me. I ran instead of staying to help. But of course, if I'd stayed to help, I would have been killed.
Dan's emotion encouraged Peggy in New York to write, "My heart breaks for the caller because I could hear the torment in his voice. Please be kind to yourself. It does not make sense to compare yesterday's events to 9/11. They share similarities and yet are quite different. You did the best you could in a harrowing circumstance. You probably cannot help feeling guilty. I would encourage you also to think about the good things you've done in the past nearly 12 years. You're here for a reason," says Peggy. Sincerely, Peggy. Thanks to both Dan and Peggy for their words. Join the conversation. Give us your take at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Thanks to the studios of KUHF in Houston, Texas. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.